The Gary Knoll Show, weekdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. I'm broadcasting live and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I'd like to thank you who have taken the time to listen in. Today, we're going to lead off, of course, with the latest on health and nutrition issues. It was 7 years ago that I suggested to our Natural Living Running and Walking Club, when we were doing the New York City Marathon every year, that instead of having the sugary drinks and the Gatorade and all the other gobbledygook that the masses of marathon runners used to replace their electrolytes, that we use coconut water spiked with either a chlorophyll green powder or a nutrient polyphenol-rich red powder. And that's what we did. And people thought it was kind of strange. Not so strange when you understand how good that coconut water is for dehydrating athletes. Here is the latest. And this is from the Journal of the International Society of Sports. This was done at the University of Memphis. Quote, coconut water matches carboelectrolyte sports beverages for rehydration. I'll quote this. Pure coconut water was just as effective as coconut water from concentrate and a carbohydrate electrolyte sports drink at rehydrating exercise-trained men after a 60-minute bout of dehydrating exercise. The new study was performed by scientists from Miami Research and University of Memphis. So, here's what we should be paying attention to. When you go to the gym, take an 8-ounce little packet of coconut water with you, and I suggest you also add a little vitamin C to it. And that way you're replacing potassium and other electrolytes essential to the functioning of your heart, less likely to have a heart attack from doing a strong, vigorous workout. And it really rehydrates you. So glad that they're doing that and hope that you all do it as well. Green tea may reduce age-related disability. Now, I know a lot of you are using green tea, either taking the supplement or drinking the green tea. If you're going to drink the green tea at this time of year, spike it. Spike it with some echinacea and some colloidal silver, some vitamin C, some manuka honey. Put that all in, stir it around, and then lemon juice. If you can't get fresh organic lemons, and it would be equivalent to one lemon per cup of tea, then get yourself one of those organic lemon juice concentrate and pour in a teaspoon. When you drink that, you're helping to fight cancer, viruses, and bacteria. You're helping to kill staph and strep in your throat, which we almost all carry. But we all don't get sore throat or strep throat or staph infections because our normal immune system is able to keep these pathogenic viruses and bacteria in check. Every time you take a honey, a raw, unheated honey, make sure it says unheated and raw, unfiltered, that has magnificent bacterial and viral killing qualities. So when you drink it, it's coating your throat, your intestine, it's helping heal a sensitive stomach, especially those who have drank coffee and have gastric reflux. It's helping your itises in your intestine, ileitis, colitis, Crohn's disease, and diverticulitis. So that's one good way to help yourself. Now, this study is in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and it says drinking green tea on a regular basis could result in people being more agile and independent than their peers as they age. They tested 14,000 elderly people for 3 years, and it was all based upon green tea and what was called functional disability. And functional disability, by the way, it refers to problems with daily activities, where you have problems shopping or doing housework or just basic things like dressing and bathing. Quote, in this study, we found significant inverse dose response, meaning the more you use, the better you got, between green tea consumption and infant functional disability, unquote. And that was according to the professor from Tohoku University Graduate School of Medicine in Japan. Quote, to our knowledge, this is the first reported study to have proved the relation between green tea consumption and the incidence risk of functional disability. Now, in the United States, we have probably 30 million Americans who have some form of functional disability. Nothing that is being done right now by anyone in medicine in the orthodox model is helping them. This could help them. It's natural. It's inexpensive. Now, mind you, it not only helps in this way, it also helps prevent cancers, stimulate the immune system, helps prevent free radical damage. So this is good on all levels. That's why green tea every day. Always encourage mothers, if they can, to breastfeed, because it will reduce the risks, in this study from the University of Colorado, of obesity. And I'll quote this. This was published in the Academy of Pediatrics and the International Journal of Obesity. Quote, children of diabetic pregnancies have a greater risk of childhood obesity, but new research from Colorado School of Public Health shows breastfeeding can reduce that threat. So the more you breastfeed, the less likely it is for your child to be overweight or obese, and that's good. Yesterday, I counseled a gentleman with Parkinson, and he's a physician, but is no longer able to practice. And he said, is there really hope? And I told him to watch a documentary. In fact, it was one that appeared on PBS stations called Power Aging. And in it, there is a 70-year-old male, African-American, engineer by trade, and you see shaking like a leaf, but then 16 months later, completely level. No shaking whatsoever. Acute memory. Got his memory back before he had memory fog. One of the questions I asked was, Thomas, what did you have this morning for breakfast? He couldn't remember. What's your wife's middle name? Couldn't remember. Afterwards, sharp as a tack. All about rebuilding the ability of the brain neurons to communicate with each other. Remember, you never forget anything in life. There's never a single word uttered in your entire existence, a feeling ever experienced, any incident, positive or negative, is ever forgotten. There's no such thing as a forgotten memory because it is a hardwired, permanent tape. The key is, how do you access them? When we're younger and we have plenty of good, healthy brain cells, it's easy to remember everything. As we get older, due to our lifestyle, social drinking, eating a processed diet, high cooked foods, that causes chemicals that break the connections, the thin little fibers between neurons called dendrites. We were told you could never reconnect these until we did. And now we know you can grow, in effect, a new brain. And you can reverse a lot of this. So it was encouraging for him to see someone who had reversed it. Remember, all it takes is one person, just one. If you have one person that reverses end-stage pancreatic cancer, one person to reverse end-stage Alzheimer's, one person to reverse end-stage multiple sclerosis, then it proves it can be done. And then it's for orthodox medicine to find that the protocol can be applied on a large basis, which it won't do because immediately that would compete with hundreds of billions of dollars in medications used non-effectively in orthodox treatment to control some of the symptoms but never improve the condition of people suffering. So none of us are naive enough to think that good medical practices will be used by doctors in the United States. It's not possible. That doesn't mean we don't have good doctors. We do, and it doesn't mean they're not using good practices. They are, but not within orthodox medicine. It simply can't exist, and except in emergency medicine. And if you doubt me, read the book Death by Medicine and watch the documentary, because it's one of these big smackdowns to orthodox medicine that it's time that you looked honestly at what you've done, causing unnecessary deaths to tens of an injury to tens of millions of people over the last 30, 40 years. All of which could have been prevented. So it's nice to know that there are doctors, scientists, nurses, healthcare educators, chiropractors, and others who are willing to work outside the official system to really benefit the patient. Here's the newest one on Parkinson's. This is from Oregon Research Institute. Quote, an exercise study published in the New England Journal of Medicine this week showed that Tai Chi, you know, Tai Chi, that very soft, oriental discipline, it's a meditation, it's a part of martial arts, but it's not used in the martial arts, it's mainly used as a meditation, helps Parkinson's patients substantially. So if you know anyone who has Parkinson's, ask them to do Tai Chi. It improves, quote, mobility, flexibility, balance, and a range of motion. And that project was funded by the National Institute for Neurological Disorders and Stroke. Drinking a large amount of soft drinks is associated with asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And I'm glad they finally did this, because I can't tell you how many times parents have brought their children. They've been to all the other doctors. Nothing has worked. And they've gotten them on all forms of steroid sprays. The children blow up. Their immune system is crippled, making them far more susceptible to other illnesses. And what can you do? And the first thing I ask is, how much sugar are they consuming? Why? No one else asks me. Well, are they consuming soft drinks? Yeah. A lot of them? Well, I don't know what a lot is. I mean, they drink the normal amount, one or two or three bottles a day. Oh, that's a lot. Get them off the soft drinks, get them off the sugar, and get them off dairy, get them off gluten, and lo and behold, away goes the asthma and the chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. This is from Science Daily. This is a major peer-review article in Respiratory Journal. Quote, a new study published in the journal Respirology reveals that a high level of soft drink consumption is associated with asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Dr. Shi, MD, PhD, University of Adelaide, and other researchers conducted the research on 16,900 participants aged 16 or older and in a two-year period. And that's what they found. They looked at soft drinks comprised of Coke, lemonade, flavored mineral water, Powderade, and Gatorade, etc. Results showed that 1 in 10 adults drink more than a half a liter of soft drink daily, and the amount of soft drink consumed is associated with an increased chance of asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. The more you drink, the more susceptible. So, as we've been saying for decades, detoxify, clean up the diet, and watch the health come back. One other area, this morning, as I normally do, I get a juice before my program and after my program throughout the afternoon. I make a special combination at the health food store. And there were two firefighters. I believe one, I'm not sure the ranking within the fire department, I believe it was a lieutenant or the person who either heads the firehouse, and they were talking about how they were there having juices because other people were getting sick. And as Juan said, when one person in a firehouse gets sick, all the firefighters get sick. So I gave them some suggestions. I'm going to share this with everyone else, because last night when I was getting an evening juice, there was some police officers there and a state trooper there. And again, they're very concerned about their health. And they talk about how around the station house, how one or two guys get sick and they all get sick. So for anyone working around high stress positions with other people, here are some suggestions that can help you in this season of flu. Understand that every time you talk or anyone else around you talks, invisible to you, but very present, are hundreds to thousands of little water beads that shoot out of your mouth. When you speak, you're forcing air out so someone can hear your voice. But at the same time, you're not seeing these water beads. And the water beads are viruses and bacteria. They can stay floating in the air for about 4 or 5 hours. When they land on a surface, that contaminates the surface, but you won't see it. When you talk on a cell phone, when you're at your computer. Now think how many times you touch your nose or your mouth or eye in a day. That's how you infect yourself. Think of how many times you touch a remote control in a house to turn on television, your mouse on a computer, your keyboard, a refrigerator, a water faucet. Any surface area is, in effect, a petri dish. That's where we get contaminated. Plus, when we're in a concert or movie theater or anything else, all it takes is one person coughing and the whole theater's contaminated. It doesn't mean we're all going to get sick, but it means we're all going to be sharing the same microorganisms. How strong our immune system is will determine whether or not we get sick. So what do? Here's the good news. First thing in the morning, make sure that you simply take no more than maybe 60 seconds. At home, spray in wet paper towels, soak them and wipe your doorknobs, your refrigerators, your television remote, faucets, countertops, any place that's a surface area, just wipe it down. At office, do the same thing with your computer and cell phones. And then, if someone is sick in the office, give them a face mask, a simple little face mask. They're inexpensive. That's going to prevent those water particles from infecting the air. Third, buy a bottle of aerotherapy. They come either in lemon, lime, orange. These are natural, non-toxic essential oils from the seed and the skin of the citrus, which are very powerful antiviral bacterials. Now, about every hour, in season, or when someone's sick, you just walk around a room and in the air, hold your arm up and spray about 10 to 20 spritzes. Then that will hang in the air as long as the bacteria and viruses, and it traps it. But it traps it at a very high level, like 1,000 to 1. So that's one way to clean the air wherever you're at. Next, get yourself, if you can, a high-quality air purifier down to 1 micron, and that way anything in the air, it's being pulled in within a 1,500 cubic feet, which is about the size of a small house, and filtered. And that's good. It'll also filter out any outgassing from carpets, particle board, normal bacteria and viruses. All good for you. Then, if you feel that you're susceptible, take 10 drops of wild oregano oil. It'll burn a little bit, but put it under your tongue for about 20, 30 seconds so it gets into your lymphatic system and killing viruses and bacteria there. Then drink down some green tea with some manuka honey. Take vitamin C hourly up to bowel tolerance. That will help as well. And this way, you're helping yourself. You can also get a little ionizer that goes on your chest. It's about the size of a little battery. It's black. You won't notice it. But it's throwing up a barrier about 1 foot around your head, which neutralizes the vast majority of bacteria that will come into your space. And then if you're around very sick people, about once an hour, just take some colloidal silver and just spray it in your nostrils and just spray it in your mouth. And that kills surface bacteria and viruses that will be on your mouth or nose. None of this has to be obvious. It can all be very discreet. Therefore, no one thinks you're making a big deal. But then you are the one who's helping prevent the spread of virus and bacteria to yourself or other people. It's that easy. It's that inexpensive. And then compare that to the person who feels that, well, with great bravado, they're tough, you know. And look, I'm an athlete. At one time, I was a weightlifter. I weighed 238 pounds, all muscle, same 28-inch waist. And yet I saw guys where I was the smallest one. There were guys 350 pounds, all muscle. And then one day they get sick. Sick from something so small they can't see it, so light you can't measure it. It's a virus. And suddenly this big 380-pound guy is laying in bed in a fetal position, you know, completely, you know, dominated by a little tiny virus. So get over this idea that somehow we're tough. We're not tough. We've never been as tough as the microorganisms, nor will we ever. They're smarter and they're more resilient. They've been here from the beginning of time. They can live at the bottom of a volcano or at the bottom of the Arctic ice, and they still live. We can do neither. All right? That's the real world. Now, as a part of our ongoing series of educating you about the future, today my guest has got a humdinger. In about 10 minutes from now, we're going to take on geomagnetic storms. They're coming. We're going to talk about also electromagnetic pulses. those are coming, and the threats on nuclear plants. Also today, I have new information about how our own our Nuclear Regulatory Commission were in a panic after Fukushima and fed the American public lies and distortions because they didn't know how to handle that, nor did the Japanese, who are still lying to the public. So are we facing a potential nuclear nightmare? My guest, Matthew Stein, an engineer in mechanical engineering from MIT and a National Merit Scholar, believes yes, and we're going to tell you the bad news, but then the good news, what you can do if you choose to protect yourself and your family, and no matter where you're at. So that's coming at you. A few more little things before we go there. From our environmental update, this coming Monday evening on my Progressive Commentary Hour, which is the most downloaded hour in American radio, commercial or non-commercial, and I want to thank the some. I think just the other night on the one we just did on the war on drugs, we've had over 60,000 downloads, all right, in just 2 days. I want to thank those people. But this coming Monday, the 12 tipping points. I felt it was time to let you know what I've been doing for the last 7 years, where I'm going around the world, how I'm filming things, and how I'm trying to first get the big picture, irrespective of political will to do something or not, which is not going to happen. So if you think your government or any government is going to do what we need to do or could do, the answer is no, it's not humanly possible. 4 of the 12 are going to tip no matter what we do. So isn't it wise that we know what these 12 tipping points are, how we can avert being victimized by them? That's Monday evening. However long it takes, that's how long the show will be. Now, otherwise, this is from the University of Colorado. Quote, the Earth's glaciers and ice caps outside the regions of Greenland and Antarctica are shedding roughly 150 billion tons of ice annually. This is from the newest study. The research efforts, the first comprehensive satellite study of the contribution of the world's melting glaciers and ice caps to global sea level rise, and indicates they are adding roughly 0.4 millimeters annually. And this is from a professor of physics, John Warr. So, what does this mean in lay language? I've told you for some time now that Dubai will be a ghost city within 10 years. A $1 trillion metropolis, some of the most beautiful and advanced architecture in the world, will be uninhabitable because it's built at sea level. And already I know people in Dubai who say that foundations are cracking, walls are cracking. You can get down buildings on that those islands they built that were multi-million dollar per house. The sea is taking it back. So if you live at ocean's level, do this. Mark on a wall, swimming pool, or the back of a building, where the tide comes, and paint it. Paint like a line and date it. In 6 months, in a year, see how much water comes in at night that exceeds that line. Remember, everything built on the ocean, thousands and thousands of condos and buildings, are all built on sand, not stone. They may have thick concrete pilings going down, but they're resting on sand. And eventually, those tides will have enough water to shift the balance and cause foundational imbalance. All because the water's melting. And that also is going to be bad for Europe. In the last 10 days, Italy has seen the coldest weather in its history. One of our staff, Paolo, is going back to Italy where her parents live for her sister. She's having a child, and she wants to be there. And Paolo's working on a very important documentary for us. And she said that it's below zero. Now, I've been to Italy, and generally in the wintertime, and I've gone there in the wintertime, it gets down into the 40s, sometimes 30. Never zero or below zero. Now it is, and it's going to get colder. What you're going to see is thousands of deaths. You're going to see a lot of freezing, and this is only the beginning. The same phenomena that causes the drought in the hottest summers and the hottest days, the rainiest days, the most snow, also causes the coldest days, with more water melting that's fresh, not salty, coming from glaciers. And I just showed you 150 billion, with a B, billion tons of glacier ice, that's fresh water, is melting. That is going to change sooner rather than later the entire current that takes warm water up through northern, by the side of Europe, up around Ireland, Scotland, and Scandinavia, and then back down. If that stops, all of Europe will go into a new ice age, or at least drop down to where 10 and 20 below zero becomes a new normal. Oh, and by the way, in Ukraine, hundreds and hundreds of people died in the last week from the weather because they're hitting 30 to 50 below zero. So, once again, it's no longer news, but it should be. So understand that when you decide where the best places to live. And finally, tuna and mackerel populations have reduced by 60%. This is from Science Daily. This is published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. A study shows that the impact of fishing on tuna, similar species during the last 50 years, has just destroyed these abundant crops by 60%. Why? Because more people feel that fish is healthy and more fish is in the diet, but there's no restraint on the fishing. As a result, they're fishing it to extinction. Okay? That's why being a vegan is a good thing for the environment. That's our environmental update and our health and nutrition update. Now we're going to take on some social issues. This is a part of our program I promised because many people are concerned, like myself, that slowly and now exceedingly common, the administration and the governmental agencies working with private contractors are privatizing our democracy for their own needs. And we're not paying attention, and we should. So I'm going to be playing you some tapes and then having your feedback. But before going on our break right now, remember I said that psychiatry was pathologizing everything? Well, they are. This is just one more example.
The first ever prescription depressant hit the shelves today. Approved by the FDA last month, Despondex is intended as a treatment for the approximately 20 million Americans who are insufferably cheery. Tests prove the drug is effective at reducing a range of symptoms, from squealing loudly when a friend calls to use of the phrase cool beans and excessive hugging. Dr. Alman Way calls the drug a huge step forward in the battle against exuberance.
If you're in a good mood every so often, well, that's fine. That's normal. This is for those that have a persistent positive outlook on life.
Eva Henry of New Haven, Connecticut began participating in a clinical trial of Despondex 6 weeks ago.
I was always telling people how cute their outfits were and bringing them little gifts. I'd beam at anyone who made eye contact with me. I didn't realize life didn't have to be like that.
Eva said she never knew how her annoyingly chipper attitude was affecting those around her.
Over and over again, I'd ask Jeff to ride his bike down to the botanical garden with me, no matter how many times he said no.
And she was always smiling, mm-hmm. but I didn't know what to do to help her.
I used to think, why am I the only one trying to set up single friends with each other? And now I realize it. I was sick. I needed treatment.
Eva says the drug may have saved their marriage.
Now Jeff and I can just waste a night sitting on the couch, watching a TV show neither of us enjoy. Like a regular couple.
Not everyone is convinced that Despondex is the cure-all for perkiness, however. In this week's Time magazine, Michael Pelosic of UCLA argues that many patients get similar results from natural remedies, something as simple as a diet of corn syrup and white bread and a total lack of exercise. But Dr. Way disagrees.
We have to erase the stigma attached with getting chirpy people help, real medical help. I mean, do you know what it's like to be around these people? It's pretty annoying.
Doctors estimate the new drug could reduce the number of costume or theme parties in the U.S. by up to 40%.
I would turn back the hand of time.
Oh, baby.
I would turn much longer. But the pain is getting deeper.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. Our guest in 5 minutes, but before then, we're going to play you a little clip, and we're going to ask you to call in and share your comments and points of view. Our number to call in at is 877-627-5065, 877-627-50... No, excuse me. The 877... No, that's not our call-in number. Our call-in number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And I'm going to go to a clip about the invasion of our rights. This is just the latest incursion into our rights, which the president is signing without opposition. Listen up.
U.S. citizens may be seeing more of what people are already used to in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Pakistan. Predator drones flying over their heads. Congress has approved a measure to expand the use of the military devices in American skies. Even though the measure restricts the use of drones over populated areas, civil liberties groups are concerned a door into a sacred constitutional tenet will be opened even wider.
We, as Americans, expect to have a certain sense of privacy. Even in the public, we don't expect for the government to be able to track all of our movements, create databases about where we were and what we did, and then take law enforcement actions. That's exactly what's happening.
The legislation is part of a $63 billion spending package for the Federal Aviation Administration. It will require the agency to clear out more commercial airspace for the use of military and even privately owned civilian drones. And civil liberties advocates aren't the only ones concerned about having the devices overhead. Pilots are also worried about having to share the space with the unmanned flying machines. The president of the Airline Pilots Association issued a statement that insists that all remote operators of drones have the same training that regular pilots have. Collision concerns were highlighted last August when a shadow drone collided with a C-130 over Afghanistan. The plane made an emergency landing, but no one was injured.
It's really alarming and it's really distressing to think of these drones flying overhead.
Mark Bray is with the Occupy Wall Street movement. He's concerned the U.S. use of drones over its own people puts First and Fourth Amendment rights on a slippery slope.
It's also of concern considering these drones are being used around the world and that the journalists are reporting that civilians are being shot down in Pakistan. So it raises a lot of questions about privacy and all, not to mention security. You know, we don't know if these things are going to crash through our roofs one day.
The NYPD has been surveilling Muslim New Yorkers who have done absolutely nothing wrong. That same sort of philosophy will now drive the area.
Well, here's the idea. Here's my question. Who would have thought that they're now insisting that a whole group now start with having eye scans at children in Florida? They're already having them get their lunch first by checking their palms of their hands, because when they did fingerprints, it smudged. But they have a new technology by a private corporation that is politically connected, so a kid can only get into a lunch program and get a lunch if they're scanned. And, of course, on that scanning is the whole identity. Now they're having tracking devices. Now they have drones. Why would they need drones watching citizens? Drones is collecting information, knows all of us where we're at and what we're doing. This is an incursion to our freedoms. And the only person I see politically, nationally, standing up against this right now is Ron Paul. I don't see anyone else doing it. To the contrary, the rest are all for it. Why? Could it be because these are the same organizations and private contractors and military-industrial complex that give them donations and give them nice lecture fees when they're out of office? Your thoughts, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear from you. My guest coming at us in just a few minutes. Now, while that is coming up, we're going to go in studio and say hello to Elizabeth. She has a question from our audience. Then we're going to take a call or two from you. And then we're going to go to our guest. But as we do, only once about every week or less, we take about 5 minutes maximum to raise a little money for the Progressive Radio Network. I'm the only program that does, so no one else has to raise a nickel. And 100% of what we raise goes to the station. Today's special, two things. Anti-inflammatory joint support and glucosamine sulfate plus. Now, I believe in having two things together. Let me tell you what's in these and why it's important. First, in the glucosamine sulfate plus, This is formulated from natural ingredients, but I give you magnesium, silicon, glucosamine sulfate at 750 milligrams, chondroitin sulfate at 750 milligrams, MSM, very important, 1,000 milligrams, Boswellia at 75 milligrams, N-acetylglucosamine, phenomenal product, absolutely phenomenal, 750 milligrams, turmeric at 100 milligrams, and then an extract of turmeric at 75, sea cucumber, ginger, red pepper, oregano herb, white willow bark, garlic clove, rosemary leaf, broccoli stem, and citrus bioflavonoids. That's all in the glucosamine sulfate plus. But added to that is the anti-inflammation joint support, and in that I'm giving you an outstanding amount of hyaluronic acid, philodendron bark extract, grape leaf extract, devil's claw, the root at 225 milligrams, and also cat's claw and decorsinol. So this is the best combination I know for all the things that people need this for. Now, we're calling this our Relief Sore Joints special. It's normally almost double this. It's $128.84. You're saving 50%, and we're giving you the following. You're also getting this plus free as a gift from me, any one of three books, Mind Power, Living in the Moment, or Natural Pet Care. That's just an extra bonus from me. So you're getting one of these, you're getting one free. So a phenomenal special, and a lot of people need this call to get your special for the best combination, synergistic combination I could invent for all of our joints. It's 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. Let's say hello to Tom from New York City. Hi, Tom, your turn.
Hi, Gary, how are you?
Good.
Hey, I do a lot of baking, and I've always been very cautious about silicone caulking. It seems very toxic, but there's a lot of silicone baking aids now that seem like they're useful. I'm just not sure how safe they are. There's a silicone steamer for vegetables.
I wouldn't use it. No, I wouldn't use it. Okay, Tom?
Okay.
Thank you. Now, Elizabeth, to you and then our guest.
Yes, hello. We have an email from Tim. He says, my young brother and I had the chance to spend the past weekend with our parents who have relocated to Florida. His father retired after approximately 2 years ago, approximately, after teaching college for almost 30 years. And he and his mother were intending to move to Santa Fe, the northwest area of Santa Fe. But the dad had listened quite a while ago, over a year ago, to the best places in America to live, a lecture that you'd given, considering all factors, environmental especially. And so for almost a year, every weekend, they would travel to different locations. This is in the United States and outside the United States, on trying to find the best places to live. When he listened to the talk, they refocused their thoughts on this whole idea, and they're now very happy to be living where they're living. There are no nuclear plants, no environmental disasters are likely, and there's no hydrofracking. So they went from living in a condo to they're now living on a 5-acre homestead, and they're so happy. They believe that every person in the USA should have a chance to listen to that program. Then the father and mother were commenting about how in the early 70s they used to come to the Fertile Earth restaurant that you had here on the Upper West Side. This was an amazing place. You had all kinds of some of our greatest artists in the world, Peter Max and Andy Warhol, John Lennon was there, anti-war movement activists. It was a really happening place to be, to socialize, converse for almost 10 years. They were there every night. And they wonder if you ever think about doing that again. And they ask also on this new homesteading project, are you likely to do something like that again?
I thought a lot about doing a restaurant again. And in time I will, but not now, because there's too many things shifting in society. There's an impossibility of getting any kind of deal on commercial real estate right now for a person to do what I did, because I didn't do it to make profit. I didn't make profit. I did it as a cooperative, so you could buy a whole gourmet meal for $2.25.
Wow.
But in time, there will be a place for that. But I will be on my homestead project. I will be having a village, an activist Remarkable Mind Village, bringing people in from around the world who will share for a month insights on how to make a better world, and streaming that throughout. So the best that we can do is to bring good minds together, to let them cooperate, communicate, and share with everyone else.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
To my guest who's standing by, Matthew Stein. I gave his biographical background, a National Merit Scholar, a mechanical engineer from MIT, the owner of Alo Aina Builders, which specialize in hurricane-resistant, energy-efficient, environmentally friendly homes. And he is here to talk about something that's not getting the attention it deserves, I believe, geomagnetic storms, electromagnetic pulses, and their threats on nuclear power plants and energy resources and availability. Nice to have you with us, Matthew.
Well, thanks a lot for having me back on your show, Gary.
Matthew, there's a lot that's happened since you were on. Matthew's also the author of When Disaster Strikes, A Comprehensive Guide to Emergency Planning and Crisis Survival. I'm going to give you three areas, and please go into each one in depth, all right?
Okay.
First, we know definitely that the solar storms are coming. That's not in question. How severe they will be is the question. Some say, well, we can handle anything. We contacted utilities. I wrote an article. It's up on my website that shows the utilities feel that there will not be any problem with the grids, the 450 to 500 major grids that will go down, or the substations working off those grids that will go down. They'll be able to repair them quickly. And I asked them a basic question. If you have a hurricane or tornado and a line is broken, yeah, it could take hours to days, but you're going to fix the line.
Right.
How are you going to fix a grid? It's like taking a radio, turning it on, and then dropping it into a bathtub. It's going to fry it. You're not talking about something that's just broken. You're talking about something that's melted, fried, and destroyed.
That's correct.
And
I'm
not finished yet.
Okay.
So then, are there places nearby? Does every electrical company have a shop that would be able to go in and take those parts of a grid that are burned and replace them? If not, where are these parts made? And if they are made elsewhere, how would we communicate with those other places, since all satellite, all communication, all internet and telephone will be out? I think they're made in China and India, and are in the United States, not the big ones, smaller ones. So what will we do? That's number one. Secondly, what if we do have a Carrington 1859 or 1920 effect? We have nothing today to compare to what that was. So compare what would have happened in the Carrington storm of 1859 to the one in 1921, and compare that to what would happen today with a similar size storm. Also distinguish the storms coming. A solar storm from a electromagnetic pulse storm, an EMP storm. There's two types. And also, what is the likelihood of a superstorm happening? Approximately when? What impact will this have on cities and the nuclear reactors? Take your time. The forum is yours.
Okay. The first is, what will we do? And I really need to talk about the impact and what's cooked by these solar storms. So the sun burps, it launches a giant mass of sun stuff, charged plasma particles, towards Earth. It launches these things out into space on a regular basis, like even the solar minimums, but most of the time they go out into space away from planet Earth, harmlessly. On occasion they hit planet Earth. We've had about 100 major significant geomagnetic storms in the last 150 years. And we experienced a significant one about a week and a half ago that lit up the sky, incredible northern lights, and people saw the pictures all over the internet. But it really didn't affect most of us very much because it was on the smaller end of the significant scale. Now, when a really big one hits, like last hit in 1921, and an even bigger one than that, these are called extreme geomagnetic events, and the one before that was only 62 years before, in 1859, the Carrington event. When one of those hits, it's incredible. You'll see in a most amazing light show, like this, the sky lit up orange and red with green streaks and gold streaks, all the way from the North Pole down as far south as Haiti and Hawaii, and as far north as Samoa. And this was in the 1921 and similar in the 1859 events. Now, when that happened, there were no nuclear power plants. There was no widespread grid. A few power plants burned down. Penn Central Station burned down. Some telegraphs burned down. Communications, very crude in those days. they were disrupted, but life went on. It was kind of no big deal. Problem is today, United States alone, we have over 100,000 miles of high-voltage power transmission lines. And those act like a giant antenna that suck up the energy, that receive the energy from this geomagnetic storm. So it's been modeled that if the 1921 storm happened today, that it would fry approximately 350 huge power transformers. And people say, well, okay, so what? Power transformer goes down, they can fix it, right? They fixed it after Hurricane Katrina. Well, it actually took months to fix after Hurricane Katrina in this area. But these power transformers, you're right, they're not made in America anymore. We finished our grid upgrade. We started putting these extra high voltage transformers. They cost like tens of millions of dollars a piece. They're custom made. They're about 25 feet tall. They weigh 300 tons. They're shipped on giant boats, and they have to shut down freeways and figure out routes to get them into place because they're so giant. And there's a three-year waiting line to get one. Right now, because India and China have been ramping up their production, there's a three-year waiting line to get one. Now, the worldwide manufacturing capacity of these giant things, these super expensive custom-made transformers, they can make like 100, 150 a year or something like that. They're really tough to make. In Brazil, they just started a plant last year to make these things, and it's such a science and art to making them that in the first year of production, they had 50% of them failed within the first year. So it's a really tough thing to do. And we haven't made them in the United States since the 90s because we stopped our grid expansion program back then. And they, you know, nowadays when one gets broken, we get one from overseas, from China and India and, you know, various plants overseas.
Okay, I'm going to interject a few times here.
Okay.
Normally I wouldn't. Just so
that's
we clear,
okay.
I have to keep this clarified. So when,
right, we got to stay on track. Go ahead.
All right, so if one of these storms hits, there's no chance if they bring down a grid that we're going to be able to repair it. That's what you're telling me. At least that's what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, you're looking at 20 years worldwide. If one of these big storms hit, like last hit 90 years ago, 1921, you're talking about 20 years worth of production when the world is working. Everything's working right now today. They'd take 20 years to make enough of these transformers to replace the ones that are fried in a single geomagnetic storm.
And that geomagnetic storm could take a couple days to a couple weeks.
That's correct. The 1921 one was 2 days, and the 1859 one was two giant coronal mass ejections from the sun spaced 5 days apart. So the first one kind of got us spinning electrically like a top on the planet, and the second one really revved it up. So it was a full week's worth of incredible light shows.
Okay, so but now what's going to happen is, tell us, I want to keep it real tight now because I'm going to get as much in the next 12 minutes as possible. So, A, what's going to happen in New York City? Just we'll use New York because whatever's happening in New York, and where is it less likely to happen?
Okay, New York City, you're going to go out and see the incredible light show like you've never seen, but the city's going to be black. There won't be any public lights going on. The street lights are down. The traffic lights are down. The lights in all the buildings are down. So you'll really get to see the light show. It'll be pretty amazing. And you'll
keep
go, wow.
Going. Let's go.
Okay,
what else?
Now, a week later, the grid's down. The power's out. The nuclear power plant at Indian Point is running out of fuel. Because the backup fuel to keep the cooling going on the nuclear power plant when it's gone offline, because when the grid goes down, every power plant in America automatically shuts down, emergency shutdown, and the backup generators and the backup batteries kick in to keep the coolant going. Now, when Fukushima blew its top, according to Japanese officials, it wasn't the earthquake that took it out. It was the tsunami that wiped out the backup generators and battery packs that were keeping the cooling systems going. And so shortly afterwards, within a few hours, the reactor core, lacking the cooling pumps to keep it going, started melting down. It started dissociating the water into hydrogen and oxygen. And the hydrogen and oxygen caused explosions, breached the reactor vessels, started spewing radioactive contamination. So here you are, north of New York City, you have a power plant with, I think, four reactors going and spent fuel rod cooling ponds on site. And once they run out of backup fuel, you're going to have a situation where you've got 9 million people or something in New York City and where are they going to go to the bathroom? There's no sewage pumps flowing. There's no water flowing. There's no elevators flowing. There's no refrigeration going. There's no power. There's no lights. There's no nothing. But the big thing is you got a week countdown to nuclear Armageddon.
How are you going to get out of town? Because everyone else is going to be on the road, and since there's no gasoline except what you got in your car.
That's correct.
The moment you wait, if you wait more than 24 hours, the roads will be nonstop congestion, and whoever's got the gas is going to have it taken from them.
Right, and when those cars start running out of fuel, you know, when wherever they run out of fuel, they've run out of fuel, and people just start leaving their cars and walking. So, you know, you're looking at a situation with mass chaos, and this is like, think about how well America handled Katrina.
Well, boy, we
not
did a job
well.
There. No. I'm going to ask you for real short answers. I'm going to go through a lot of stuff now, all right?
Okay.
Real short. How many nuclear power plants do you believe would be adversely affected around the United States, and where would be the safest place? I need short answers.
There's roughly 104 nuclear power plants in the United States. Most of them are in highly densely populated areas, which are the areas subject to grid collapse. So probably all of them, you can assume that all of them, certainly some of them will run out of fuel sooner than others. Some store a month's fuel, some store a week's fuel. They're only required to have a week on hand. 37% of Americans live within 50 miles of a nuclear reactor. So where the population is dense is where the nuclear power plants are and is where the grid collapse happens.
Okay,
so
that's
get as far upwind as you can. But learn where they are right now and where you live right now.
Okay, we have charts of that that identifies everyone.
That's right.
Secondly, since there will be no power and you won't know a nuclear accident has happened, you won't hear it, there won't be any news. And
correct.
You can't have FEMA bring in a little water truck when you have 200,000 people living in a neighborhood and
correct.
All of them need water.
Correct.
And you're going to have gangs who are out there exploiting it. They think it's a great time to steal and rob and create mayhem because there's not going to be police response. How likely is it that the police responders and fire responders are going to be able to do anything when there's no communications?
Well, in a recent tabletop exercise on this, they had top responders, military and first responders, on a big tabletop exercise in D.C. by the War College. And it turned out that most of them would be abandoning their positions and going home to help their families fend for themselves. So you're really on your own. And in my book, When Disaster Strikes, I outline specific strategies and what you need to have on hand
to keep
your family safe.
We're going to get that in a few minutes, all right?
We're
going to go through what to do. I'm still trying to show the honest picture. So there's no television, there's no radio, there's no cell phone, there's no traffic lights, no elevators, there's no gasoline, no water, no toilet, there's no food or water. That'll be gone within.
Correct.
And hence the roads will be congested. You'll see people siphoning gas. You'll see gangs running amok everywhere.
Correct.
The older people, the homeless people, the poor people will not be able to go anyplace. And therefore, a lot of people would just be hunkering down now. Is anything I just said inaccurate or exaggerated?
No, it's actually 100% correct. I mean,
okay.
there's nothing inaccurate.
Now, then that's for the first week. Then the power grids goes off. There's two reactors, by the way, at Indian Point. They get about 2.5 billion gallons of water a day to cool them down. That coolant system stops.
Right.
And then you get about a maximum of 59 hours before you have a meltdown and it blows. Now, question. Based upon a 26-mile distance from where our studio is here in Upper Manhattan on the Upper West Side to Indian Point,
right,
where I'll be leading a demonstration, one of the leaders of the demonstration in another 2 weeks, bringing this to people's attention of what we can do, at a wind blowing at 12 miles an hour, it's not 9 million people you're impacting. It's
right.
20 million people living in this congested tri-state area. Within 5 hours, all those people have been receiving some level of radiation, including plutonium, the most deadly substance on Earth.
Correct.
Within 5 days of that close a distance, virtually all the people there would be contaminated, some severe. Children would be having radiation poisoning. Within 2 weeks, massive deaths with no one to help the people, no hospitals. The hospitals, emergency rooms are going to be closed. Their backup system's down. No one will be able to do anything at that point. There's no
right.
treatment for radiation sickness at that level. Within 1 month, New York City would never be habitable in history of the world.
That's correct. Not for generations.
Not even generations. You can't decontaminate plutonium. If that was the case, then around Chernobyl, it would be in the villages be decontaminated by now.
And it's true that you guys have plutonium, which is like the worst. I mean, if you have uranium, it's bad enough. But if you've got a reactor that contains plutonium, then that's essentially, in our terms, it's forever contamination. That is correct. And now here's the thing. For about $1 billion, we could install the equipment in the grid to protect these critical giant transformers that are so difficult to replace and have such a long lead time. And for about another $1 billion, we could guarantee that every nuclear facility in this country at least had a year's worth of fuel on hand and had an EMP hardened container on site with backup generators and spare parts, critical spare parts, so that in the event of, you know, some EMP, which we haven't talked about yet, or a solar storm grid down situation, that, you know, we can't prevent all the bad things from happening, but for the price of a single stealth bomber, we can prevent the end of the world as we know it. And right now, today, if this storm happened from 1921, you would see the end of the world as we know it. You would see a mass extinction on our planet equal to the one 65 million years ago that wiped out the dinosaurs in a short period of time.
Here's where I have to disagree with you, and strongly disagree with you, Matthew. Yes, everyone on Earth would be affected, but A, the Democrats, Republicans, and Donald Trump's hair would survive.
Yeah,
I'm going to hide under Donald Trump or Wayne Newton's hair.
That's what they think. Yeah, it's the magic shield. In God we trust, and, you know, okay. For 50 years, the engineers and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers said the levees around New Orleans was a disaster waiting to happen. It wasn't if, it was when. And this is another not if, but when.
Okay,
disaster.
I need real short answers. How long do you think before this happens?
No one knows. It's a crapshot. But the scary thing is we have a solar maximum. Every 11 years, the sun's poles flip, and you get an extreme solar.
So that's about a year from now. I need short.
That's coming about a year from now, and according to the way the sun's behaving on the way up to the maximum, scientists are concerned we could have a repeat of 1921 or 1859 events, but nobody knows. It's a crapshot.
Now, real quick, please, because I'm going to invite you back, not today, to talk about electromagnetic pulses, but on another show just by itself, and I'll give you an hour to do it.
Okay, that sounds great.
But now I need to know real quick, what can people do to start preparing to protect themselves in this catastrophe?
In this catastrophe, you need to have some spare fuel on hand, ways of purifying water. You need to have materials like seaweed, modafinil, or other extracts to help chelate heavy metals out of you. Hopefully you won't have a worst case. I mean, if it's a worst case, you know, you might just want a bullet. But if it's not a worst case, then you're definitely being able to get out of town, being able to purify water, being able to have some supplies so that you can go it both in your car and on foot is critical. And all of that stuff is in both my books, When Tech Fails and When Disaster Strikes.
We only have about a minute and a half left. My final question for today, this will be continued. What can we do politically to make this an issue that our politicians have to insist that this becomes a Manhattan Project? So this has to be the top priority to protect us with the grid protectors now. What can we do?
Call your congressman now. Say this is critical. Say that at least start with the current SHIELD Act in there, but go beyond that. Make the government step in. Right now they're trying to put it on the shoulders of the utilities, and this is too big. We don't put our public schools in the private matter. We don't put our military in the private hands. This is too big. The government should have this on their plate. Make sure it's done. Make sure it's done now, like Manhattan Project. Get involved. And say that and go to my website, whentechfails.com. There's links at the end for more information of the Article 400 Chernobyls. Get involved. Wake up. Wake your congressman up. Call them. Thousands and thousands of calls. It will make a difference.
We ask people to do it. We are also putting articles up. I've written an article. We'll put your article up. You wrote a very, very good article called Geomagnetic Storms, EMP, and Nuclear Armageddon for the issue of Nexus. We'll put that up there. We'll put all this in one place so people see how to prepare. Plus, I wrote an article and did a two-hour lecture, which is free up there, of how to prepare to get out of town and have a plan A and plan B. All my friends and I have our plan A and in position. So those who want to be prepared will be. Those who want to live in denial, it will be unfortunate if this happens, because they will not survive this. Nor do I believe will New York City survive this as a city. So thank you very much, Matthew Stein, for sharing this. We will do an entire hour within the next 5 days on electromagnetic pulses and other threats to us from these upcoming storms.
Well, thank you, Gary. It's been a pleasure. I hope I didn't ruin your day, but, you know, we can make a difference.
Bad news becomes empowering when we realize how serious it is and how incapable our current political system and the major media is in covering it honestly. So we're the source where people come, because we don't lie, we don't side, we're not ideologues, we're not left or right, we're just truth, and we will continue getting this to people because that empowers people. That doesn't disempower you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Gary Noll. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for Mike Vader right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
The Gary Noll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matthew Bogart. All shows are archived by Kyle Pollard. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Tavenfeld.